Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
The National Weather Service in St. Louis has issued a flash flood warning.
Floodwaters are closing roads and forcing residents to evacuate.
Emergency evacuations ordered in Nashville, Illinois. Officials say the dam there suffered an initial breach.
That's just a little bit of what made this station a Murrow Award winner. Breaking news coverage. You heard Michael Calhoun, and you heard Debbie Monterey and Megan Lynch and our terrific news team here at KMOX. And right now we're going to spend a little bit of time. It's hour three of the show. Chris and Amy, by the way, thank you for being with us. We're going to talk about National Radio Day. We thought it was a good idea to have Michael Calhoun, KMOX reporter and anchor, with us here in studio. First of all, congratulations on the Murrow.
It's a team effort.
Team effort.
It's an organization award.
This,
and it really was the whole news team. I mean, breaking news is the category where everybody's got to mobilize, get out the door, make the phone calls. We go wall to wall. It's everybody.
It really is. And I will say, you know, by KMOX standards, the short time that I've been here, when there is breaking news, one of the coolest things, I mean, aside from what's going on, because news is usually not good news, but the coolest things is I'm watching through the glass. We look at the newsroom.
You have a floor to ceiling window right here over the newsroom.
That's right.
It's like you have a little ant farm.
It's like a show.
Right there, and you can just watch them all.
I've never thought of it as an ant farm. That's what it is.
That's what it is.
And when you see, you know something's happening. When all of a sudden, like, Michael Calhoun stands up, Beth, our news director, comes out of their office, and Debbie's there, and Megan Lynch, and they're walking around, and they're going back and forth, and everybody's on the phone.
There's commotion. We call
it commotion.
And
I'm fascinated by it because the work that you guys do is so important. And it's, I mean, like I said, I feel like I grew up with Michael Calhoun. I am older than Michael Calhoun, but I feel like I grew up listening to his voice. I mean, that's the authority. That's how much you rely on.
There's a lot of debate about whether I started at 9 or 12.
Yeah, he was a child, but a child.
I also trust you, Michael.
Were you 20?
20 when you started here?
So pretty soon you will surpass, not pretty soon, you're young, but I mean like Tom Ackerman had that moment, right, where he switched over where over half of his life has been at KMOX.
You'll have wow.
That. Yeah.
This got heavy real quick.
This is like an intervention.
Wow.
Well, no, it is interesting. You know, when you're 40 and you've been here for 20 years.
Yeah.
That literally is what you were just saying.
But the newsroom, like give people, like I you mentioned the ant farm. That's what I get to see you guys spring into action. What does that look like when you do hear, you know, there's been, you know, horrible flooding or, you know, a shooting, you know, heaven forbid, and it happens, but a shooting, what does going into action look like?
First of all, knowing if we have to go into action, you know, making the phone call, not just saying, okay, somebody's got a tweet that says something has happened, but let's get in touch with, you know, that person. Let's call the gas station next door, the police department, obviously, or the fire department, like, depending on what it is. Mm-hmm. But the first step is always to find out, is this true, before we tell five people to grab the keys and run out the door. And so, you know, that's step one. And then step two is just kind of like second nature almost at this point for all of us in the newsroom. We just, you know, we know what our role is, and then we know how to get out there and, you know, either confirm information or talk to eyewitnesses or, you know, bring the team together or whatever our individual part might be.
It's like being embedded. That's why local newsroom is so important, because you're embedded in the community. You know people in the neighborhoods where the stories are happening. You know the city leaders. So, for instance, with the fog of war that was the riots in Ferguson, you were on the ground.
Yeah, it was several months of every night in Ferguson on, you know, pins and needles, wondering how it was going to play out, and did a lot of work for CBS then. And that really brings up to me, I think, one of the, you know, you talk about breaking news, and we were talking off air about, you know, you like to compare, like, how does the BBC cover something in America versus, you know, NBC? when there's something huge, I like to pull up the local station. I mean, no offense to what the national networks are doing, whether it's CNN or CBS News, but I'll pull up CBS News Minnesota, or I'll pull up WCCO Radio, because I want to hear what's happening. Just like in St. Louis, I know that if a national reporter comes in, they're just not going to be as familiar with St. Louis. But these KMOX reporters, or Channel 5 reporters, they know St. Louis. They know the streets. They know the people to talk to. They know how to pronounce things. They know how the procedures work. And so, especially in a fast-moving breaking situation, I go right to the locals.
Just a quick note. That happened not that long ago with the shooting at the Super Bowl parade in Kansas City. We were listening to local Kansas City radio, the Kansas City newsroom. You don't go to CNN, like I said, God bless CNN and the national news, but I mean,
they'll often then say, let's simulcast KCTV right now.
You go local.
So as you've been doing this for a while now, how has it changed? How in the last 20 years is it different?
Well, first of all, the technology is different. I mean, when I started at KFRU in Columbia, Missouri, it was mini discs. And it was it was the Columbia Tribune posts all of their news stories, you know, at 2 p.m. Let's see, you know, what enterprise reporting they've done today. Like, it was that kind of a mindset. And now news is rolling. First of all, it's 24 hours, you know, so there's no what's going to happen in the 5 o'clock newscast on TV or when's the Post going to post their stories or for us thinking we've got this big story. We're going to air it in the morning. Well, maybe we need to get it out at the next top of the hour instead these days. And then just the technology, instead of having to drive a van to a big, you know, breaking news story or having to physically bring my mini disc tape back to, you know, the station. It's all on my phone. I can even dial in like with a, you know, we'd call it an ISDN line, like a direct line quality from the field anywhere. So I think that it's just much more fast-paced and much more immediate.
Like, you're kind of a walking broadcast station, if need be, with the phone?
That could be, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It's so much easier to broadcast from anywhere.
As long as there's cell phone service.
Right.
Internet access.
Of course. Which kind of brings us to the AM signal thing. And we still have 1120 AM. We've been heavily promoting 104.1 FM because it's an awesome signal, but the farther out you are, 1120 is accessible for a lot of people, and a lot of times when bad things happen, one of the last lines of communication is AM, so we still have that too.
Yeah, I mean, cell phone towers can go down pretty easily, and anybody has checked their phone, you know, pulled up the weather app, and it says it's raining and you're in a different city, and it's like, well, no, it's... I'm not in Albuquerque and it's sunny outside. What are you talking about, phone? So humans are important. And then that universal access without cell phone service is, you know, essential. And when it comes to 1120, one of my first KMOX memories was in high school with my father in Washington, D.C. And we're in the parking lot of the hotel. He goes, watch this. And he turns on 1120. And there's Jack Buck and Cardinals baseball.
It's awesome.
Booming in a parking lot in D.C. I've listened to Blues Hockey going over the bridge at St. Pete in Florida. Like, 1120 is crazy.
Well, like Ricky Horton, when he pitched for the Cardinals, he's from New York. His parents listened to KMOX from New York.
Yeah.
They just listened to it. They could listen to the games at night. And you know,
44 states.
That's right. I mean,
that's why the Cardinals are what they are. You can go to Busch Stadium, you'll see Tennessee, Kentucky, Arkansas, Iowa, all these, Indiana, all these license plates. And it's because for the longest time, there was no baseball team west or south. So
my friend last year went fishing in Alaska late at night, and he could hear KMOX.
Come on.
He said it was
in Alaska?
Insane. Yeah, he said it was
And it wasn't the stream.
Insane. It wasn't the stream. No, no, it was. But I mean, I guess the clear channel hits even harder at night.
Yeah. It skips off the atmosphere. The Rocky Mountains mess with it a little bit if you're going west, but
don't you think too, in this age of like everything, I get it, modern technology, and people think, oh, well, radio is an anachronism, you know, it's old, we're all podcasts now. I think it's the opposite, because radio has something, multiple things that podcasts don't have, and that is
immediacy.
Yep. And There's a humanity that immediacy brings that you can't get in a podcast, even television, a little bit more polished. I think radio is and remains the most intimate medium, and I think people crave that as we increasingly go robotic and AI, and customer service is just recordings. I think people...
Or chatbots,
and you're like, are you real? I think just hearing real people, it feels so intimate and human.
Yeah, and in terms of just that real, you know, humanity part of it is essential in this age of, I mean, people need that connection. People are wondering what's true or not. As I talk about, you know, sometimes whether it's traffic or weather, like the apps can screw up. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah.
What is your feeling? And this is, I think, a guess for all of us, really. We can make an educated guess, but what the future of this medium is and how it might change and evolve.
You know, it's funny that really the biggest evolution was when TV came onto the scene and Robert Hyland, the legendary general manager of KMOX, said, we're going to throw out the records and we're going to, you know, ignore TV and we're going to try something brand new. And it's radio is just, I mean, how many times have people predicted the death of radio, I guess? And so, you know, podcasts, live radio, it's all like spoken word audio. It's all really the same thing.
Different forms of the same thing.
If you look at the ratings, I mean, the KMOX stream gets higher ratings than many full radio stations in the St. Louis metro.
Yeah.
And so no matter how you get KMOX, whether you think of it as a radio station or you think of it as this live stream by these St. Louisans, like you can put it in whatever context you want. I think that what you guys are doing is like KMOX of today. It's what KMOX would be, you know, in the natural evolution. And, you know, people can get you after the fact on a podcast as well. So you can call it what you want, but I think that just listening to people talk is not going to go away.
Yeah. I mean, I've been a talk radio nerd my entire life, and I love it. And there is a difference between radio and even podcasts. Not all podcasts are created equal, and some of them are just rambling. It's hard to describe, but it also feels, like I said, distant. It's pre-recorded.
Yeah,
You're not in the moment with them.
Or it can be closer, because so many of them are like really niche.
Yes.
And they know they're only going to get 100 listeners, but they can really like super connect with those 100. But like, how do you get that kind of, how do you reach like St. Louis when you're doing it 100 people at a time?
But it's not real time with a podcast.
That's true.
There's
too.
Something to be said for,
they do
for, like,
emergency podcasts sometimes if they can, but it's not like any time of day, if a huge event is happening, you know you could put KMOX.
Well, and the breaking news thing, if you listen to that in KMOX, like you could do the podcast and save it, edit it, upload it, and by the time you're done with that, it's all outdated.
Right.
Like,
right.
We're just rolling live.
Right. And I think that's, again, yeah, you're rolling live, but then, okay, what was it? 42 million people watched The Cosby Show every Wednesday, right? There was this shared experience. Well, now with all of the streaming services, you can watch on demand. We have very few shared experiences, a few live sporting events. Mm-hmm. And there's something to be said for knowing that everyone watching is on the edge of their seat. They're anticipating the next move. And I think there's something to be said for radio, whether it's a funny joke or it's a breaking news story, or like the Gas House Gang, when Ali Marmol makes a comment and you're asking him questions, we're all reacting at the same time.
Yeah,
all,
right.
Like you, Ranj, are reacting at the same time that I am to what Ali Marmol said. And there's something about that shared experience that has become increasingly rare with technology. And so like, I crave that. I want to laugh when you're laughing, Michael. I want to find out something when you're finding out.
You're
something.
Laughing even when I'm not laughing.
I'm laughing most
of
the time.
Yeah, she's got a real... And everybody can hear it. Everybody in the entire building can hear it.
Yeah.
Well, Michael, go do some work. We appreciate you coming in. There's
you're
some
the best.
News out there. Go chase it.
We'll find it.
Michael Calhoun, the voice we all grew up to. Even if
he's,
we're older than you.
Including me.
He's right. Michael Calhoun from the KMOX newsroom. You're the best, man. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
It is the Chris and Amy Show. It's 104.1 FM KMOX. We're going to be talking to Stephen Richer, the former Maricopa County recorder. You might remember him. We're going to talk to him about mail-in voting and the voting machines, because the president says he wants to do away with all of it. So he will join us just after 11:30. It's Chris and Amy on KMOX.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense, while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
have a hypothesis that everybody in St. Charles is related to each other.
No, we don't.
Well, no, that's kind of what's happened today.
It's not a hypothesis. Here's what happened is...
Speculation?
We are just asking
is
questions.
This wild speculation?
We're just asking questions because that's our understanding that everybody's related to everyone in St. Charles. We didn't know this going into the show. We found out from St. Charlesans.
Yeah. This texter says, my fourth cousin is Mark Burley, but I've never been to a White Sox game because I've never met the guy because he's my fourth cousin.
See?
Even though a fourth cousin was
this
possible.
This is why when Dan Borgmeyer, the mayor of St. Charles, said, listen, I didn't know my relatives were sailing the land to the data center. I kind of get it. If it's his second or third cousin, bro, I don't know my second and third cousins. Nobody does. But at the same time, when he said everyone in St. Charles is related and that he's related to Steve Ellman, well, then that just got us down a whole other path of, is this true?
And I don't know. I feel like it's something that needs to be looked into. This text message says, this is from Pensacola Jones.
Oh, what's up, Pensacola?
Says he grew up in St. Charles, but not related to any other Jones out there that he's aware of.
Oh, but he doesn't know.
I think his name isn't even Jones.
That's right.
He made it up.
His name isn't Jones. I forgot that part.
Hey, you want to give away? Let's give away some tickets right now.
All right. Be caller number 6
to the contest line. Blues Wild. Blues/Wild at Enterprise Center October 9th. It's the first game of the season for the Blues, and you can win a pair of tickets. Caller 6 to 955-1120. 314-955-1120. We're also doing 100 Acts of Kindness, Amy.
Yes, with Jerry Kelly Heating and Cooling and Air Conditioning and
Plumbing.
And Electrical.
And Electrical.
Did I not say electrical?
I think you did.
You said cooling and air conditioning.
That's right. Wait, let me start over. 100 Acts of Kindness with Jerry Kelly Heating and Air Conditioning and Electrical and
Plumbing.
They do everything now.
They do everything.
Jerry Kelly's killing it, man.
They're killing it. You know where they are located originally?
St. Charles.
That's right.
Do you think they're all related? Actually, they're a bunch of people related to each
other
at Jerry
Kelly.
It's
a family business.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, Jerry Kelly has been awesome. I know that they brought lunches to the teachers at Francis Howell School last week when the teachers are getting ready for classes to begin, so probably an exciting and stressful time for all the school teachers out there. So Jerry Kelly, pretty awesome, bringing tons of lunches there. And they have been, we've had different people reach out, Ronj, say that they're paying it forward.
Yeah, and I think we've been encouraging everybody to do that. Just, you know, do a little kind gesture. It doesn't have to be anything grand. You can do grand stuff, but just little kindnesses throughout the day is a good thing. So, and we got this Facebook post from an Oakville resident, I guess a Facebook group just for people who live in Oakville. And this one stood out to us, and it was a person who says, tonight my family and I had dinner at Rizzo's. We sat up at the bar section. There was a lady at the table next to us. My kids naturally talked her ear off, and she gladly accepted their conversation. She then told my husband and I how lovely our children were and how much she enjoyed them talking to her. On her way out, she informed my brother, who was a server there, how they were the highlight of her day, and she paid for our entire dinner, which I thought was so kind and generous. So I'm hoping this finds her so that we can say thank you for our meal. See, that's a nice thing that person did. And it was they weren't prompted to do it. They just felt compelled to do it. And that's a cool thing.
And I want to finish up. She said it meant so much more than we can express. So glad to see that there are still good, kind-hearted individuals in this world. We promise to pay the good deed forward. And that's what's so awesome about this. That's the whole point of the Jerry Kelly 100 Acts of Kindness. Hey, there's enough negativity out there. We know that, right? Things can be depressing, but there are good people. And honestly, I do believe that when an act of kindness, you help someone out, you hold the door open, it really does do more for the giver, I think. I think it fundamentally improves who you are.
Well, you know, the restoring my faith in humanity thing, sometimes you'll see posts on socials about that, like a person does a thing and you go, oh my gosh, you know, that makes me feel good that there are still good people out there, because everything it just seems like everything sucks right now. When you have those random moments, even if it's something very minor, it does that to you.
It does.
It really does. You think, oh my gosh, okay, good. There's a person here who's not a complete butthole. This is great.
I want to get this right. And again, it's 100 acts of kindness with our friends. Jerry Kelly Heating and Air Conditioning and Electrical and Plumbing.
All of it.
They do all of it.
They will come to your house to put those little footies on so they don't track dirt into your home.
I think every month we should add a new service that they provide.
Oh.
That would be our act of kindness. Surprise, we grew your business.
Didn't tell them?
Landscaping.
That's a massive undertaking.
That's a massive undertaking.
How about window washing?
Okay, and then landscaping.
Let's mull it over. What new
service
can we give to Jerry Kelly and inform them that they now do?
Yeah, because heating and air conditioning and electrical and plumbing, that's a lot. But
it's
I think we can add more. It's like when the guy is balanced, spinning the plates on his head, and you keep adding plates. This is fun. This is going to be great.
I think so too.
I think they'll be happy with it.
And five is better than four. Five services better than four services.
Yeah. I think Jerry Kelly is going to say, wow, how do we grow our business? Oh, wait, Chris and Amy did it for us. We're landscapers
now. And we did not consult them
whatsoever.
So you may have heard President Trump a few days ago or seen that he said on Truth Social that he wants to do away with mail-in balloting and the voting machines completely. Wants to get rid of them. A lot of people rely on mail-in for sure. So we are going to talk to Stephen Richer, who is the former Maricopa County recorder. You remember in Arizona, a lot of controversy, or at least I guess you can call it manufactured controversy, about the election integrity. We're going to talk to Stephen Richer, who ran as a Republican. We will talk to him next about this on KMOX.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.
It's the Chris and Amy Show on 104.1 FM KMOX. Recently, President Trump says that he wants to get rid of mail-in voting altogether and electronic voting. He's not a fan of that. And this is all happening in the wake of the Newsmax settlement with the Dominion voting systems and the amount of money they're going to have to pay out, because there's been a lot of talk about election integrity. To discuss that with us is the Senior Practice Fellow in American Democracy at Harvard Kennedy School's Ash Center for Democratic Governance and Innovation. And you might remember as the former Maricopa County, Arizona recorder, who joins us now. It is Stephen Richer with us on KMOX. Stephen, appreciate having you on once again. How you doing?
And that was a heck of a long title. I'm impressed that you got it all.
Did you know that it was that long?
It sounds awful. We'll have to work on that.
Well, just say Bud. That should be on your business card.
He does something related to democracy and elections.
That's right.
And just like the slogan, remember Maricopa?
Oh, God, no. I don't know how people would take that.
So, I mean, before we get to the stuff that we wanted to talk to you about, you were primaried out from that position after all of the vitriol that came your way. And we talked about that last time last year before the primary. Yeah. What was that experience like for you after all these people were so angry because they thought the elections were messed with?
Yeah. When I ran 4 years ago, it was a lot of fun. You get to meet a lot of people. You get to go to lots of places. It's high energy. It's a team spirit. When I ran for re-election in 2024, it was like pulling teeth, because every night I would go to Republican Party events, women's clubs events, community events, but all for the Republican primary. And obviously, a central feature of the office that I was running for re-election for was elections. And there's just a fundamental, differences of facts that I had with the majority of the Republican primary voters, which was about the 2020 election, which was about President Trump's reaction to the 2020 election, and that was incompatible. And so you could show up, you get booed about a lot of things when you say the 2020 election wasn't stolen. So it wasn't too much fun, but glad I did it. I lost. It happens. But then I served out the remainder of my term, which was the rest of the year, oversaw the 2024 presidential election. And of course, President Trump won Arizona, and he obviously won the United States. And so I don't know if that was some measure of forgiveness was afforded from some of these people, but it was a heck of a ride.
Yeah, I mean, this is it's such a big conversation about the integrity of the elections. I think one, well, two points I always go back to before we get into mail-in voting. One, there are certain pillars of a democracy that are integral for holding up that democracy, and that is fair elections, the integrity of the elections. And if you, for President Trump saying, well, he didn't win. If I win, they're fair. If I don't win, they're unfair. And being so careless and frivolous with the integrity of the elections was so damaging to our democracy. So you had that. And two, elections aren't run by the federal government. They're run by the state, which means you have Republican election officials and Republican secretaries of states and Republicans involved in each of these states with the elections. It would be a massive conspiracy to think that Republicans and Democrats lied about all of that.
That's right. And share your sentiment as far as the importance of election administration. I felt at times like I was beating my head against the wall when I was trying to convince people that the 2020 election wasn't stolen. But I think about what you said, and I felt similarly. And so I kept at it, and I keep at it even today in a different capacity. And that's why President Trump's latest post to Truth Social about mail-in balloting really bothered me, not because of the public policy debate. And you can have a legitimate public policy debate about if we should have mail-in voting, but just the number of factual inaccuracies that were included in that post that could sow further seeds of distrust in election administration. And as you said, that's the backbone for what we're doing here.
So let's talk about that mail-in voting, because a lot of people rely on it, rural areas, older people, people who are in college or overseas in the military. How secure is mail-in voting actually?
So mail-in voting has been around in the United States for a long time. We've had it in some form since at least the Civil War. And actually, many Western United States, it's the dominant means of voting. And in Arizona, we've had no excuse mail-in voting since 1992. So we've gotten better at it as individual states and as a country. And obviously in 2020, at the height of the pandemic, a lot of people use mail-in voting for the first time, and roughly about a third of the country votes by mail in some form, whether that's getting a ballot by mail and mailing it back, whether it's getting a ballot by mail and then dropping it off at a voting location. There are lots of securities built into the vote by mail process, beginning with the fact that you have to be a registered voter in order to receive a mail ballot. Then in most states, you have to request that mail-in ballot, so they don't just send them out willy-nilly. They send them out to confirmed addresses. Then once you get that, you have to sign usually your affidavit envelope that houses the ballot, and election workers will scan that envelope in, load a vote to your profile so you don't vote twice, and then they'll also do signature verification. So there's lots of steps. It's an iterative process. It's getting better every single year. And again, we have a judicial system. We have a criminal system. And when there are, yes, individuals who try to commit some small level of fraud, people do get prosecuted. And that's a sad thing, but it's a way of life that some people try to violate the law. But those are onesie-twosies, nothing widespread.
Why the abrupt change by the president on mail-in voting? Because it was this most recent election in 2024 that GOP groups spent millions of dollars encouraging people to vote early and to vote by mail. Donald Trump Jr. did a whole campaign on the East Coast. I think it was in Pennsylvania that Donald Trump Jr. was urging Republicans to vote by mail. So they utilized it in 2024, and now they don't want it anymore?
That's right. Poor Republican voters have been watching a ping pong match or a tennis match with respect to mail-in voting, because after the 2020 election, they heard about how horrible it was. They didn't do as well as they wanted in the 2022 election. And then in the lead up, the 2-year lead up to the 2024 election, exactly as you said, Republican strategists spent millions and millions of dollars convincing Republican voters that they could vote by mail. And Republican strategists just wanted you to vote. If it meant vote by mail, great. And in fact, some ways they like that more, because then you get your ballot in and they don't have to worry about you anymore. They don't have to spend money to get you out on election day. President Trump himself would say some nice things about mail-in voting. President Trump himself used to vote by mail in Florida. And so obviously that did quite well. And it's a little bit, if it's not broke, why fix it? Because President Trump was obviously successful. Republicans hold the U.S. House. They hold the U.S. Senate. So I don't really get the about face, other than he had a conversation with President Putin of Russia over the weekend. And President Putin said something about mail-in balloting. And now it seems to be the bee in President Trump's bonnet. And he's talking about it now.
So what would be the long-term effects if they were able to completely do away with it? I'm assuming that would be a massive challenge to totally eliminate mail-in voting, and probably likely not to happen, I would guess. But if it did happen, what would that do to our election system?
Well, so on the predicate, I agree that it's unlikely to happen. The United States Constitution delegates broad authority to the states in terms of the how of administering election, which is why we have such a different model in different states. Voting in Missouri doesn't look like it looks in Oregon or in Georgia. It has some similarities, but different things are different, such as even the hours of voting locations, or how many days in advance of Election Day you can vote, or what you have to do to get a mail ballot. And if we were to change that, one, I think President Trump wants to nationalize the election system much more so that different states don't look different. Two, I think a convenience that many voters have enjoyed for many years would all of a sudden be gone. And then three, for states that rely heavily on mail voting, they would all of a sudden have to stand up a very different election operation. Because, for instance, in Arizona, in the county that I ran, Maricopa County, about 1.9 million of the normally 2.1 million ballots that we'll get will come in by mail. So if all of a sudden you had to have all 2.1 million voters show up on Tuesday, Election Day, and vote in person, that means we need a heck of a lot more voting locations. We need a heck of a lot more election workers. And I suspect we would have longer lines when voting in person as well.
I know every state has slightly different mail-in voting rules, but a state like Florida, they learned their lesson with a voting kerfuffle back in 2000, and do not they run their mail-in voting meticulously? Like, they're able to count the votes. A lot of people in, you know, Republican Florida use mail-in voting.
Yeah, mail-in voting is present in Florida. You can vote in person or you can vote by mail. Florida has an earlier return date than some states, but they've been able to use that model very successfully. And yes, it does happen that a lot of the sun states that have large retirement communities were among the Republican states that enacted vote by mail earlier, because they just wanted to afford their voters that convenience. And so many of these vote by mail programs were put into place by Republican state legislatures and were signed by Republican governors, and others have been put in place by Democratic state legislatures. And in fact, the political science literature, the studies show that increase in vote by mail accessibility has a small impact on increasing turnout, but has no partisan effect. And so it's not an R versus D thing.
We're running out of time here. Wish we had you for a little bit longer, because there's a lot that we can get into with you about this. But just real quick, the electronic voting machines, is there much cause for concern with them and their integrity?
Yeah, unfortunately, we've been talking about this for a long time now. And you mentioned that Dominion recently won yet another litigation matter, and they settled for, again, millions and millions of dollars, because everything that everyone said about Dominion, which is a tabulation company, after the 2020 election was false. Tabulation machines are simply scanners that read ovals. They work the same way as the machines that graded you when you took the SAT in high school or you took a standardized test in college. They simply scan in physical paper ballots that you've hand marked, and they read ovals. Now, of course, they should be just tested before and after every election, but we've been using them for a long time, and there is no reason to believe that they are anything but fast, reliable, and highly, highly accurate. So I'm disappointed in that.
All right. We will see you when you're in town. You're coming to Wash U to speak to the people, and hopefully you'll come by and speak with us too when you're here.
I would love that. And I guess that will be around the time when the Cardinals play out. Well, the Cardinals will be out of the playoffs.
Okay, well, Steven,
I guess you guys won't be playing baseball anymore at that time, right?
And I just I just made everybody mad here. Great. Great.
Way to go.
Hey, the Diamondbacks aren't doing so well either, so I feel your pain. And you guys have a rich history. And so, you know, hope springs eternal.
That's it. We're in a transitional phase, much like the country. So,
but we look forward to having you in Studio B, even though you poo-pooed the Cardinals. Not thrilled about it, Stephen.
I'm just merely pointing out where you guys are.
Okay. Yeah, we know. We know. We live it every day,
we're
man.
We're the home of the Cardinals, Stephen.
Yeah, it's like Wagga. Hey, you know you're ugly. Yes, I know. I get told every day.
No. One of the most beautiful ballparks in the country. Love it. Love the setting. Would love to go to a game. I'm just a little disappointed, like I said, that you guys won't be playing at that time of year.
Too late. Way too late. Too late. Right. Not enough. Stephen Richer.
Thank you very much for having me.
We appreciate you. Thank you so much. That is Stephen Richer, Senior Practice Fellow in American Democracy at Harvard Kennedy School's Ash Center of Democratic Governance and Innovation with us again. He is really, really good. We appreciate him, and we appreciate you for listening to the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX.
Chris, Ron, Jamie, Mark scores with you as we continued our conversation about 100 acts of kindness with Jerry Kelly Heating and Air Conditioning and Electrical and Plumbing. We thought we should add another service because Jerry Kelly's awesome. Yeah. And we thought, wouldn't that be fun if we gifted them another service? And so I thought landscaping.
That's just this huge undertaking.
I know. I get it. And it is outside focused. You suggested window washing.
I did, yeah.
Colonel Ripper on YouTube suggests garage door repair. That's an excellent.
That's not a bad thing.
Excellent submission. Gino said, what about pest control?
Okay.
That's a good one.
You have to get all new equipment and you have to get all the bug spray. Which I bet is a huge undertaking. How do you get that much bug spray?
Oh, I think you order it in bulk.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Bulk bug spray. Robert, who's also watching on YouTube, said, what about Jerry Kelly classified document storage?
Now, that's a service we could use.
Yeah. He's thinking outside of the box. He's thinking inside a box, but outside the box.
Well, I do think that this is more of a problem today than it ever has been, the classified document storage. And I don't have any reason to think Jerry Kelly would not be capable of handling that. They do everything.
Maybe we should ask them. We can ask them the next time we talk to them. And here's the thing. With the boxes, like or the classified document storage, they could make it like an electric, you know, code. That would fall under their purview of electrical. And here's what we know about the classified documents. They'd be temperature controlled.
See, this
because they do heating and air conditioning. Because you don't want to submit your classified documents to extreme temps.
Great. This is great stuff.
And if it gets wet, well, it won't get wet because they do plumbing.
They'll do it. All we have to do is make a quick phone call and they'll do it. They will absolutely do it. And I feel good about that. Hey, congratulations to Lana in Collinsville, who is going to the Blues game on October 9th. Mm-hmm. They take on the Minnesota Wild, and it is the first home game of the season. And if you missed out today, you have an opportunity tomorrow to win. Got to be listening for your chance. And Friday. So we are always giving things away on this show.
But you're running out of time.
For the week?
Yeah.
Are you ready for Blues season already?
Well, I'm so excited. I was doing a lot of Blues research yesterday, just kind of catching up on the team. You know what started it was the Milan Lucic.
Right. We talked
PTO,
about it yesterday.
Professional tryout.
Right.
So there's a good, I don't think he sees the light of day.
You mean the roster? Probably
yeah.
not.
No. Yeah. He'll just have a tryout.
Meanwhile, Amy, I just can't wait for, you know, the start of the Bears championship run.
Yeah. Well, so when will that happen?
Early September is when it begins. So. Early September, baby. And ends? How dare you?
That's what's nice about it. It's a nice, tidy little package.
You better get used to this phrase. Caleb Williams MVP. Get used to it right now.
For when?
For the end of the season.
On
what do you
what
mean
team?
For when?
It won't be with this team.
All right, that's it. If you missed anything on the show, you know where to get it. The Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. All 3 hours there ready for you to consume. Coming up next, it is the Gas House Gang. I've got Tom Ackerman with me. We will be talking to Rick Ankiel at 12:30. Yeah. So you'll want to listen in. But we'll be back with you tomorrow. Amy Marks Kors and Chris Ranji on the Chris and Amy Show. 9 o'clock tomorrow on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Your true crime podcast keeps listeners on the edge of their seats. But here's the real mystery. Why isn't it making more money? Odyssey Creator Lab is here to solve that. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on the suspense while our sales team brings in advertisers and revenue. Stop leaving money on the table. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and turn your passion for true crime into real revenue.